I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 566, the 2017 Game Awards.
You're doing it right.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey, sis.
How you
long doing? Long time. I feel like I don't talk to you, like, enough. Like, I'm not a good sister.
Well, here's the thing. Part of the reason why we started this damn podcast was to make sure that you and I at least talked once a week.
Once a week.
You know, hey, you could do...
Gold star for that!
Pieces of flair. You could wear just the 15 pieces of flair. Or, you could do more.
It's the season. It's the season to
be
given.
Remember that shit.
It's the season to be given tea and shade, you know what I'm saying?
I do be given the shade and the tea.
You know, Santa needs to roll up with tea or shade. Like, either he gives you the tea, or he gives you the shade. Now,
Santa needs to stop fucking around, and, like, serious and for real, just give everybody coal.
It's like, look, I saw what you did in your bedroom on Tuesday night, okay? Like, I saw, and that was clearly not good.
Okay, I saw what you did. I saw you not give that dude a dollar when you walked past him. You know damn well you could give him a dollar.
I looped in with Jesus, and Jesus was like, look, your scale of good or bad is not nearly the same as my good or bad. Let's take our lists and let's compare, shall we?
Look, when Jesus...
And, like, let's scale it back.
When Jesus is throwing shade on your life, you really done fucked up.
When Jesus is like, hey, Peter, like, this person's gonna roll through the line, like, this week. Like, make them wait 40 more minutes than they need to be before you let them in. Just let them sit there and ponder about that lie they told right before they died.
When Jesus gotta come work the line as a bouncer, you really messed up.
Like, no, like, okay, like, okay, tangent
no,
time.
No, we can't tangent. We got
no,
a
no,
to cover
no,
the show.
This is such a great thought. Please let me get this out. Okay,
it is
okay.
The season of giving.
So in my mind, right? Because you're like, heaven's like the great thing, but there's like a long ass line to get in. Like, it's the best party and you're going to wait your line. What if hell is the line that you wait in? So depending on how bad you are, that's how long you wait in the line to get in.
Mind blown.
Okay, now back to the Game Awards.
Okay. All right. So as Panda mentioned, we are talking about the Game Awards this entire episode. So, you know, at this point, if you were interested in the show, I know you've probably watched it. But if you haven't, now is absolutely the time for you to turn this podcast episode off. Because
yep.
I'm telling you,
we ain't talking about no anime. We ain't talking about
Christmas.
No comics. We talking video game awards. So if you wanted to experience that 3-point-something-hour experience without our commentary, pause. Go find that shit on YouTube. Watch it. I mean, have a snack because, like, some of the breaks are just really harsh. But get some snacks. Get your favorite blanket. Watch that for 3 hours and then come back. Because we gonna spoil the fuck out of the 2007 Game Award nominees and winners.
Yeah, we're spoiling a lot of shit for you.
Well, I mean, it's not spoiling because, I mean, it's after the fact. But, it's fresh. It's still new.
Then it's spoiling it. So... That's what I'm saying.
Hey, I didn't read the Bible and when people drop lyrics, I'm like, spoilers.
That's you needing to fix your life.
It's like, I didn't read past Corinthians, okay? So if you're reading to me Jobs, I ain't got there yet.
Oh, you missed the good juicy parts.
I know, right? Yeah, I know. I should get back into the Bible, but I just ain't ready for that. Like, no, there's some truth in there.
I'm not telling you how to live your life. I'm just saying, like, yay. And also, yay.
Yay.
Anyway. We have a lot to talk about. We are not going to get through every single category of the night because that would take damn near as long as the show took. And we're not about that life. This is not a 3-hour tour.
Like, we ain't pulling Oscar time here, okay?
No, we're not. So we're going to talk about some of the categories that we were really, really interested in or that we thought, you know...
Like, when I watched it, I printed out all of the, like, nominees, and I had my highlighter, and I was like, I want to talk about this category, and that category, and I want to talk about this trailer, and that trailer, fuck that trailer, fuck that trailer.
So that's what this show is going to be. Obviously, we have opinions about all of the categories and stuff, because we're opinionated broads, but we really wanted to kind of, like, pare it down to the stuff that was really, really important to us. So that's what we're going to talk about.
The things that impacted us as gamers.
The things that resonated deep in our core.
With us as people.
I don't
who also play video games.
With me as a person. But.
No.
Definitely.
Because are we talking? I can't even remember right now because I've been drinking wine since we started, like, preparing for this. But are we talking about games for impact? Because,
yes,
like.
Yes, it's on the list. Can we get to the list?
Okay.
I have also been drinking, because I got a little bit of the, you know, spilkus in my Genetica joint. So I have had some...
Kill it with alcohol and fire!
I'm trying to kill it with whiskey.
I mean, whiskey will do it.
Yeah.
Whiskey will do it.
Uh-huh. You know, I know how to be healthy, because I'm over 21 and an adult.
Yeah, me too! Oh,
so,
God.
That said, let's jump... right in to the first category. So up first, we're talking about best family game.
Oh, I'm so glad that we're getting all the G stuff rated out right now. It's at the
That's why I organized it last night while I wasn't drinking and was just feverish.
It's like, let's be family friendly right now because, you know.
It's not going to be as we get
It won't stay that way.
It's not. So first up, best family game. Now the nominees in this category are Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Mario & Rabbit Kingdom Battle, Sonic Mania,
Yay!
2,
Woohoo!
Super Mario Odyssey. Now,
hey, I see a lot of Nintendo. Why isn't this just best Nintendo game? Because there's a lot of Nintendo in this category.
The Game Awards just need to have a best Nintendo game.
I really
feel like you could get away with a best platform category and people would be okay with it. Like,
I agree. In all honesty,
I would be cool with, like, a best Nintendo game, you know.
A best PS4 game, best Xbox game.
Best, you know, Steam.
PC game. Best PC game.
Best handheld. Because best handheld is a category and it is separate from best mobile. So I do feel like they've kind of started to do that, but just, like, go all the way. Let each console have its own king, because let's be honest, for most of us who play multi-console, we do have a best or favorite game on that console.
We do. You're absolutely right.
You know, and I do think that there's something to be said for, like, crowning a winner amongst your independent titles that are exclusive to a platform.
So let's talk a little bit about the nominees in Best Family Game, because I can tell you right now, in my family of two... Me and my husband.
You and
we have all but one of these games.
I can tell you personally that of this list, I own two of the games on this list.
Four of them. Okay. So, like, we own, in my household, we have all of them but one. We don't have Mario Kart 8. But we have all the other
ones.
So we can talk about all the games. Because, so my husband has played the Mario plus Rabbids. And I've watched him play it until I've fallen asleep. Which is usually fairly quickly after he starts the game. Which should clearly tell you that I'm not into strategy games at all.
Right.
But, like, I like the idea of, like, the story of this game. Like, I like the immersion. I mean, some people, you know, either you really love Rabbids or you really hate Rabbids. They're very polarizing. Like, either you get them or you don't. And I mean, in most cases, I'm indifferent. I don't dislike them. They kind of remind me of a bygone era of, like, Ren and Stimpy, kind of crass, but not crass, but cute enough that, like, you can kind of cross over.
Right.
Like, that's the line that they like to tread. And I kind of like that they took this, and they're like, hey, let's find a really established, family-friendly thing and blur these and see how far we, like, what can we get away with blending these two things. And that's what Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle kind of does. And, like, my husband will play it every once in a while, but, like, for a strategy game, I guess it's okay. I mean, he seems to really be about it and thinks it does bring something new to the strategy shooter genre, which it's not something that I play at all. So he was just like, yeah, I could see how that would be a kind of a friendly family game, and it also introduces something new to the family franchise with the strategy. But, like, out of everything that's on this list, like, I'm really kind of sad because the one I really wanted to win doesn't. But the one that did win, I do understand why it won. So, like, I'm not mad at it. I just wish that the one I wanted was stronger.
Right.
Maybe.
So, out of this category, I own and have played Mario Kart 8. I've played Mario Rabbids. I don't own it. I have not played Sonic Mania.
I bought that shit first day.
Well, I knew you were going to. Like, that's...
Oh, my God. I was like, take my money now.
But,
playing this all day. Husband ordered me a pizza and mott sticks now.
But,
boom.
and I own Super Mario Odyssey. So, in this category, which I do think that every single nominee that was in the category deserved to be in the category... Of all those games that I have played, because I can't really speak to the ones that I haven't, although I've watched a bunch of people play Sonic Mania, and it looked phenomenal.
It is definitely a love letter from fans of
and I'm not
old, nostalgic.
Fan, so,
see, I am. So I was like, dear Sonic, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Sonic Mania. Not even, just Sonic Mania. Because all the nostalgia is wrapped up in a beautiful bow in Sonic Mania. All the best things about Sonic outside of Sonic CD,
we block out the bad Sonic and we focus on the good Sonic. Okay, you can't live in the past. You gotta look forward. Except for Sonic Mania, which was a look at the past that went forward. So that's why it worked. But, like, in looking at all of the nominees, I think that they all absolutely deserve to be up for the award.
For nomination, absolutely.
But Super Mario Odyssey won the category, which wasn't really a surprise to me, but I kind of really wanted Splatoon 2 to take it.
Me too. Me too. And here's why. Now, granted, I have not played Mario Odyssey. My husband has, but I've been there through his... Because he's going after all the hard moons right now.
Because
okay. There's over, like, 900 moons
in
this fucking game. And, like, he's doing the hard moons right now because he got all the other moons. And, like, he doesn't come off as a collector to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I get in that zone, and you know, like, when I'm in that collector mode, I want to get all the things. I want to do all the things.
Get
I want
all the cheap.
Yeah. I want all the achievos. And I don't usually see that in his personality, but for this game, he's like, I'm going after all the moons. I'm like, you're going after all the moons?
All the moons.
You know, and, like, and some of these moves are, like, tricky, and I'm like, I would get mad, I'd have to walk away, but he's like, nope. He's like, when I'm ready, I'm jumping back in. I'm going after those hard moons. And he is. He's doing it. But, I mean, I played Splatoon 2 because I love Splatoon 1. And I was like, what could they do to enhance Splatoon 2? And they did enough. They did so much more in Splatoon 2 to open up the Splatoon world. And I was like... I feel it's innovative enough, and it definitely brings in so much more aspects of, like, playing more, multiplayer, being able to have a... And, I mean, I feel bad for Splatoon 1, because there was a great single-player aspect to Splatoon 1 that a lot of people did not tap into until way after the fact. And, like, they just expanded on that, and I'm like, it is a great way to bring the whole family in, and everyone could have a slice of Splatoon 2. And I really wanted it to take the win. But, I mean, Super Mario Odyssey was a big letter, love letter from Nintendo to Nintendo through several iterations of Mario. Because, I mean, if there's anything that Mario Odyssey does, is it reminds you of every aspect of Mario. like, from the beginning, like Jumpman Mario, all the way up to 64 Mario, and even, you know, because it does have remnants of, like, Mario Galaxy, like, it is all Mario, all the time, for you to enjoy. And, like, it definitely brings everybody to the couch in a way that, unfortunately, Splatoon 2 doesn't do. And Sonic Mania does, but not nearly to the same degree that Mario does. Like, you hear Mario and people flood. You hear that Mario theme, you flood into the room that Mario theme is playing. I mean, if you loved Sonic and you hear the Sonic theme, you'll show up. But, like, the enthusiasm is completely different between the two flagships, in my opinion. I mean, like, I love both of them. And, I mean, like, I do have a strong love for Sonic. But, I mean, when I hear that Mario theme wherever I'm at, like, I do the Mario jump. And, I mean, I can't spin and do tumbles like Sonic. So, I mean, like, I can't show my appreciation that way. But my hat goes off to Super Mario Odyssey because I feel deserved the win. I just wanted the fan favorite, which I totally think in this case would have been Splatoon 2, to take the win from Mario, just to bring him down a notch. But I understand. I understand Nintendo. I get right. it.
And, you know, I get it as well. It makes sense. But at the same time, still, that's where my heart was. All right, so moving on to the next category.
Which is a new category this year.
It's a brand new category. This category is Best Student Game. Now, I love the fact that, you know, Jeff Keighley and team wanted to highlight student game production because there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, B-Fig was born out of the game design and development program at MIT, really.
Right,
and
right.
There's some great games that are coming from indie that start with students creating a concept and a game, and then when they graduate or as they leave because they're able to get funding, you know, become a game dev house, which is awesome. So
I'm glad that they made this
a student award, because it just verifies, solidifies, and validates the work and the effort and the grind that people are going through to become creators of games.
Yeah. No, as soon as I saw that this was a category, I was like, good on the industry. For one, being able to, you know, like, when you are at the top of this pyramid, like, it's easy to look down and be like, yes, fledglings, reach my level. Like, you can completely get that mindset, and a lot of people do. And, like, they get stuck in that I am untouchable peak of the pyramid. But for this category to show up shows me that, one, the people at top realize that they won't be on the top forever, and that innovation is at the bottom, and they have to start looking down, and not looking down like a negative way, but they have to look down to look forward.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so in my mind, I'm like, look at them stepping outside of all of this success that they've had, because they've clearly had it, but realizing that, you know, it doesn't stop with them. It will continue after them. And I was like, what a great way to, like, tip your hat to those who will come after you.
Yeah.
You've built to expand. Like, it's a beautiful sentiment. Like, I absolutely love that they did this.
So the nominees, you say them, because I said the nominees for the last one.
So for Best Student Game, we had Falling Sky, which came out of the National Film and TV School. And that literally looked like a fucking movie. As soon as I saw that, because they put that later in the package, because, like, they built up to it. And I'm like, oh, these guys know scale form. these guys have a lot more going on, because they can, like, map out a scene better than everybody
else.
And then
I saw who produced it, and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Of course, that makes absolute sense. We had From Light, which was from the University of, what was that? It's USC, I think what it was. And then Hollowed, which came out of the University of Central Florida. We had Impulsion, which came out of IMM. And then we had Level Squared, which came out of Swinburne University, which is Australian. And then Meaning, which came out of the DigiPen Institute of Technology in Singapore. So, like, they touched so many different areas on the map, which I appreciated, because I was so worried that we'd see a lot of things coming out of, like, France and Germany and places that have, like, established schools
I'll be honest with you, I really thought that they were just going to focus on European areas, frankly. So it was really nice to see that a couple of games came in from, you know, here in the U.S., in Florida and in California. But every game looked really interesting.
Very much so. Now, the one that, when they showed all the playback, I was really worried that they were going to go for Falling Sky, which came out of the National Film and TV School.
Because only because it looks so high produced.
Exactly. And I was like, no, because, you know, indies have been making stronger and stronger strides for, I'd evenly say, for like the last 6 years, we've seen strong strides in the indies. I'm like, so it's beautiful. Like, you could totally see this, like, on Steam right now for playing. Right. Like, I would pay $12 for that right now.
Right.
Like, clearly. I'm like, but that's not the point. Like, it's great that it looks good, but is there anything more to it? And granted, you know, you only get a snippet in the slice reel, so you don't really know what the game is actually about.
Right.
But then you get down to, like, Impulsion, or you get to Level Squared, which actually was the winner of this category, which was the one that was out of Australia. And when they announced that, I was like, I kind of dug that. Because, one, it kind of screamed to me, like, it's definitely puzzle. But it also kind of gave me, like, an aspect of, like, I could learn something. Because this is, like, Squared. This is math. This is stuff that, like, anything that deals with math, I usually try to walk the other way. Unless it's additional money to me. That's the only math I care about, usually.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, but this might, you know, this might be something that would, you know, squeeze some math in there and make it approachable for those of us who were, like, squeamish about math. And, like, this could be fun. And it looked engaging. So when they announced it, I'm like, okay. I'm like, I see how there are different avenues here that, like, this could be really good. And when I saw the guy who came up to retrieve it, I'm like, oh, he's like an adult student. Like, I'm thinking, like, kid student. Like, right. I was expecting, like, 8 kids to show up.
Hey, everybody can like go back to college. There's no age limit.
That's right. Back to school. Back to school movie. Exactly. Any age. But in my mind, like, when I think students, like,
expecting
I'm thinking
to see, like,
young.
You know, a 20-year-old pop-up and be like, I brought my mom.
It's like, I'm 18 years old. I'm from Australia.
That was really,
that's so inappropriate and insensitive.
I apologize to any of our Australian friends for what she just did right there.
I love you guys. I love you. I'm sorry. But yeah, so my perception was clearly subverted by the man who accepted it, but he was so humble and so gracious. I made sure to mention everybody who's working on Level Squared. And what a solid win. Like, I hope we see more interesting things come out of the Best Student Game nominees.
And I think that we will, because, you know, like, one thing I'm just going to touch on quickly, because we got a lot of categories to get through here. But one thing that I don't think, like, people had a lot of reaction to that I did was that, you know, Bethesda had a little reel that they made an announcement that they were donating $100,000 to the ESA to fund scholarships.
I know, and no one said anything. They were all like, yay.
Yeah.
It's like, no, be more happy about that.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
A lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and that's, you know, like, to get people in the door, that's quite a few, you know, people getting into programs. So,
hey,
you know, it's not like $100 million, but,
hey,
you know, shit, that's $100,000 going to the
ESA. If I took out a donation box and someone put $100,000 in that box, I would not say boo.
So I was really kind of surprised that there wasn't more visceral a reaction to that, because I was like, yeah, Pete Hines.
Nah.
Give them people that money.
Believe it or not, I feel like there was a lot of subdued, like, it was a really subdued crowd at this Game Awards. Like, that Phoenix performance, like, you know, maybe they just stopped inviting us because I got really emotional at that E3 that Usher showed up at, because, like, clearly,
you did get really,
like,
emotional.
They need... I got real emotional, got real loud, stood up real quickly, like, but I was engaged, clearly.
Yeah,
and
but
like,
you were real loud.
I was.
You were,
like, I was that random guy on the stream that we watched who would randomly woo after Xbox stuff. Like, that one guy was just like, woo!
Yeah.
I'm like, are you being paid or are you just that happy?
Were,
and it's probably a bit of both.
You were woo-wooed. All right, so let's keep it moving. Although I will say, I did enjoy that Phoenix performance.
Oh, it was so good.
Really good.
And, like,
we
no
would have been
one...
losing our shit if we had been there. All right, let's keep it moving, because
okay,
we got a limited amount of time. Best audio design. So,
okay,
for the best audio design category, the nominees were Destiny, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, Super Mario Odyssey, and The Legend of Zelda. In all honesty, when I think about the audio design as a whole, so that's voice work, that's background music, that's sound effects, that's, mm-hmm. you know, all of that put together, I don't know that I would necessarily throw Super Mario Odyssey into this category. And I think that part of it is because many of the soundscape pieces that are in the game are sounds that have existed throughout the franchise.
But you could say the same for Zelda.
So, if you
cut those two out of here completely, I think the top three have a stronger case for a win than the other two.
Correct. And that's really what I was trying to get at, is that, you know, many of the sounds that are in the soundscape for Zelda, much like Super Mario Odyssey, have existed in the world. So, you know, that's separate from, you know, the unique music pieces, you know, the songs that the accordion player plays, the songs that are discovered throughout, you know, I'm not throwing those aside. I'm just saying that the majority of what the soundscape is a known quantity. You know,
right.
I know the sound and have known the sound. The sound has existed for a long time when I discover an item in Zelda. That's why I have that nostalgia thing when I hear
right. They're building on all that. And granted, right. like, there are some similar sounds that happen in Destiny to Destiny 2, but I think they brought a little bit more to Destiny 2.
There's a lot more narrative. There's a lot more, you know, vocal discussion. There's more, and it is different. You know, the guns sound the same, but characters don't. Your movements don't. The conversations that are had are different. You know,
so in my mind, from these, the two heavy hitters that I really thought would seal the win were Hellblade or Resident Evil 7. And that's not because I'm a Resident Evil fan, okay? Because we all know I am. Go back into the history logs. You'll hear me talk about all the Resident Evils.
More so for me, it is the audio than the video in that game that is the most terrifying thing about the game.
Did you play it, or did you just watch other people play?
I watched other people play. You know what I mean? Why you even ask that question? Why you even ask that question, Panda? Who are you talking to?
I'm sorry. I should have just assumed. Because, I mean, I watched someone play it first, and then I played some. So, I mean, there's a little
bit... I watched somebody play it with headphones on, so...
Okay, well then, if you played it with headphones... So that's what I did. When I played it with headphones, and I feel like the soundscape in Resident Evil 7, because remember, this is kind of I'm not sure where in canon this falls yet, because I think they're still trying to disseminate exactly where it falls in the timeline, because it does. But there are all these subtle nuances of unease in their audio, and they found a way to not make it not over empower you with, oh god, this is clearly scary, you should be scared. Like, Resident Evil 7 was clearly like, something is off. And that something of, and that's the main sentence for Resident Evil 7, is something is off. They want you to always feel not balanced, uneven, and unsure at all times. And the audioscape, and I mean, granted, visually, it is absolutely terrifying. Like, half the shit you see, like, any normal human being would probably have had a heart attack and, like, ended their life, because that is terrifying stuff. But some people have a great time of playing horror games without sound, because it's the sound that builds the unknown in your mind. It's the audio. And they brought it back to basics. Like, that little shift with that little bit of a delay with a shift of a chair or a shift of a door puts people on edge, and it's beautiful.
It is.
So I'm glad it got its props and it got its nom for this, because I clearly think that, like, it was a great return to basics, but showed how simplistic a soundscape can be and still be impactful and make a sense. However,
that being said,
Hellblade completely won this, and I completely believe that it was justified.
That it should. So, you know, that game...
You played it, though. You played Hellblade.
Yeah, I did. I haven't finished it, because it definitely messes with you. But the soundscape of that game is the core mechanic of the game. And I say that because in the game, you are playing the lead character of Senua, who is basically going through a mental breakdown. And it is the voices in her head that affect your actual game and what you see and how you react to things. And you go then through this mental breakdown with this character. It is recommended from the start of the game when you put it on that you put on headphones, because there is audio that, you know, you will not actually pick up unless it is right in your head. And in the translation of what her psychosis is, it is the play on how audio moves around your head when you have headphones on to detect the transfer of sound across your head that makes it feel like these voices are in your head as well. And that's really part of the game experience for the player. And it is done so well.
That it's masterfully crafted.
When I think about that,
and it seems
whole.
Effortless. And the sad thing is, it seems effortless. But like, there was so much thought, passion,
research,
direction,
trial, error. Like, so when you think of that, you know, that's part of the other reason why it's really hard for me to, you know, feel good about Odyssey and Zelda being in the same category versus these two games that we just talked
right.
about. But really, a fantastic win for Hellblade, which, in all honesty, really only reached a niche audience, but should have reached more because it really is a fantastic experience. So I hope more people, because of the win, will see it. Because, you know, the winners in these categories typically do go on to see a little bit of a bump.
I agree.
In their sales.
Yes.
So I'm hopeful that, you know, more people will check out Hellblade, which is a digital-only title, because it is really, really worth it. And I just love Team Ninja Theory
yeah.
anyway, so.
So moving right along, the next category, Best Performance. So I'll read these, sis, because
yep.
you've been talking a little bit more than normal. So in this category, we had Ashley Birch for Horizon Zero Dawn. She's also, you know, the main titular character, persona in Hey Ash, What You Playing? She's also was in Borderlands 2 as Tiny Tina. So, like, we've heard her. Oh, also, she was in Strange... Not Strange Things. She was in Life is Strange 1, not 2, just for clarification. So, like, she has started a really great, lucrative voice acting business for herself. But she was the main titular character in Horizon
Got
Zero
it.
Dawn
keep
as
moving,
Aloy.
Keep moving.
Brian Bloom for Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. I think he was also BJ Blazkowicz in Wolfenstein
yep.
2. We had Claudia Black from Uncharted Lost Legacy, and we had Laura Bailey from Uncharted Lost Legacy, which I ain't even gonna be mad that they couldn't get a person of color to voice a person of color, because I like Laura Bailey. She's been in anime forever. And lastly, we had Melina Jurgens, who was Senua from Hellblade. All of these people have great...
great performances.
Great performances all around. Like, and we've got some heavy hitters who've been doing this for a while and some people who are very new to the game. And I love that the winner from this was Melina, who played Senua from Hellblade, because she was so humble to Andy Serkis. Like, she was just like, I love all your work and all this. And she clearly states that this is her first voice acting.
Right. She's an
ever.
Engineer.
She's an
engineer,
engineer
at Ninja Theory. She's not an actress, but they believe that she could do it.
And she did, and she delivered, hands down. And she was like, I'm so humbled to be able to give a voice to those who struggle with this type of thing in their lives every day, and to give them, like, that platform and that voice.
Yeah, her acceptance
so that people can
the only
be,
one that, like,
oh.
almost made me cry.
Like, I did. I teared up quite a bit. So, like, wow, Ninja Theory. The fact that you have all these talented people who may not even be tapping into everything that they could possibly be doing to raise the game. And you found this diamond in the rough. And she was, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah,
I love this
award win. I love her story. It inspired me to actually do some research on her this morning before we started the recording. And I just unequivocally, hands down, as much as I love Laura Bailey and Claudia Black and Brian Bloom's performance and Ashley Birch's performance, like, in that list, like, every single time I'm going to give it to Melina, and I'm so glad that, you know, she got it. Also, I'm so glad that they, you know, no longer do best male performance, best female performance, it's just best performance. Everybody's all in the pool.
Right.
Because
I don't think it should...
Before.
It was. All right. So with that said, can we talk about Death Stranding for a minute?
Yeah, we can talk about
Death Stranding for a minute.
Go ahead.
Okay. So not only in this show did we get to see, you know, Kojima hang out with Guillermo del Toro, like totally like being bros, but then we also got to see, you know, Kojima out there with Norman Reedus, and they're like, hey, by the way, here's an extended trailer to Death Stranding so you can see a little bit more than what's going on. And oh my god, my eyes just could not absorb everything that was happening. Cause like I was like intently like licking my screen as soon as that trailer started hitting.
Yeah.
And my husband's like, what is the deal? I'm like, no, there's more going on. I must absorb all of this. Sponge to the TV. So, like I'm glued.
So here's the thing about Death Stranding for me, right?
Okay, yes.
Let's bring it back. So I love Kojima.
Okay. Yes.
I love Guillermo del Toro. I can't watch all his stuff. Because
me neither.
But I appreciate his creative genius and his process. And I love the man because he's such a happy guy. And so to really come up with some of the crazy shit he comes up with is just a marvel to me.
So, I love that he takes love stories and then interjects all the types of uncertainty and horror that love stories really should show because they are happening. But anyway.
So I watch the Death Stranding thing, and I'm expecting a Death Stranding video because, you know, Kojima is now free to do and be Kojima, and I expect him to Kojima. And, you know, we got the teaser last year.
Yes.
And I'm still processing what I saw from last year, trying to really put it all together.
We're seeing a lot more now. He's giving us a little bit more. So we're getting sci-fi in this.
There's still a lot more questions than answers. What the fuck though?
Yes. So he's bringing in an element of sci-fi.
Yeah,
he's
bringing and I'm all for it.
He's bringing in that element of like suspense, creepy horror. It's not completely overly gory because all of it is highly symbolic. Symbolic all over the place.
And I can do symbolic stuff, but I know Guillermo's working on this. So I know
there's a thing where the symbol is going to turn, going to do like this, you can't see, but it's going to take this curve, right?
And it's gonna, mm-hmm. it's not gonna be like a nice, you know, rounded.
It's gonna be like a roller coaster drop.
Negative, like, you know, degree turn, and you're like, I feel like I must have broken a leg or something.
We're going into ourselves via our throat, very much like in that trailer when we go down into Norman Reedus's character's body.
And then there's a baby that's like, hi! And you're just like,
the baby's all like, shh.
First of all, I'm like, that's not where babies come from.
It was actually hilarious. My husband's like, men can't make babies. And I'm like, I know. So what does it mean? What does it mean? And then, of course, like, the whole, like, small tear. And I'm like, I love the subversion.
I love Kojima, so I'm here for this.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Still not going to play it, probably.
The big takeaway for me from all of this was that, like, here's this entity, because, I mean, I don't want to say it's alien, I don't want to say it's mystic, but it's probably a mixture of both. But, you know, the fact they're like, don't breathe, do not show any signs of life, because it seems like these things feed off of the life around it. And that's what they absorb, because that guy who was pinned, like, as it got closer, his life was being drained from him. So they feed off of life.
I got that. Look, you know, we could do a whole episode on just this trailer. So let's keep it moving, but we will definitely come back.
Like, if you haven't seen the trailer and you're of appropriate age and you feel emotionally strong, watch it. If you're not, wait. We will talk about this and dissect it, because you know I'm playing this up and down and left and right and in and out.
All right.
Moving on. Best action adventure game. Take it away, sis.
Okay, so in this category for best action adventure game, we've got Assassin's Creed Origin, Horizon Zero Dawn, Super Mario Odyssey, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and Uncharted The Lost Legacy. Again, for all of these games that are nominated, I feel like they all deserve being in the category. In all honesty, I have played 4 of the 5 nominees. I did not play Horizon Zero Dawn. But out of all of them, I'm really kind of torn. So Legend of Zelda won the game. I do feel that it deserved the win. But I'm really kind of torn in that I kind of wanted Lost Legacy to win this.
Okay.
And the main reason for that is, one, I felt like Assassin's Creed Origin really came out too late to deserve to be considered. You know, because it was only a couple months old at the time of the awards. Like, not everybody had even made it to end game yet in the game.
Right.
But Lost Legacy had been out for a long time, and even though it is core mechanic based on the Uncharted world, it was a fantastic action-adventure game that featured two female leads, never in a damsel-in-distress kind of way, with some great mechanics. So I know why Zelda won, and I don't disagree, because it is a completely new take on the Zelda world. The whole openness of
it. It opened it up.
It made it feel more like an adventure game, as opposed to really what it always felt like to me, which was just a puzzle solver. Even in going through the dungeons, it was solve the puzzle to get to the dungeon, solve the puzzle in the dungeon.
Yay. Bitch, you can climb trees!
Exactly. So, you know, I do think that it's a good win, and I'm really happy for Nintendo on that. So, the next thing we're going to talk about, just really fucking quickly, because we both squeed about this. I know we both
squeed. Oh my gosh, yes we did.
So
we both did.
Jeff Keighley started the show with the first world premiere, which world premieres were dropping like they always dropped in the game shows, which makes me happy. But the first one was of a game where they showed two characters in a desert. And it's kind of that midway between cartoon animation and direct anamorphic animation. So the people look like stylized somewhat caricatures of people.
They kind of remind me of Team Fortress 2.
Yeah,
in terms of animation.
Yeah, I would say that's.
It had that look.
Like it. Of these two characters. And then as it gets into it a little bit more, you realize that they are in Egypt and they are doing something in old ruins and temples in Egypt. And then we get the first shot of one of the characters and it's a black woman. And of course. Yeah, I had a Jesus moment.
Oh my god, my mouth just, like, did, like, the really big, big, big smile.
And I was like, oh, like, and then the next thought my brain was like, she's probably, like, the assistant to your character, because it's definitely a first-person look that we have here. I'm like, but even at that, she looks really smart. She's, you know, already doing some stealthy things, lurking around a corner and stuff.
She rocking that natural hairdo.
She got the natural going, and so I'm here for this game. I don't even know what it is, but I'm here for it now because she looks like a really strong, smart character and active. And she's, you know, in my head, I'm like, even as a sidekick, she's visually what I'm seeing most in this trailer. So much so that the first time that I saw her hands from the first person perspective, I missed it. But the second time I saw it, clear as bezammed, that the hands of the character, the lead
that
protagonist,
you play,
are also black girl magic. And I was like, oh, I don't even know what this is, but take my money. I don't even know if it's the type of game. I don't care if it's turn-based. I'm going to do this. I'm here for this.
Bro, did you play Firewatch?
I did. I didn't finish Firewatch. But see, I didn't know that it was a Captain's Campo Santo game until at the towards the end of the trailer, because it runs through like everything you see, and then you finally see from the makers of Firewatch. And I was like, oh, snap, Campo Santo, not here to play.
Not here to play.
Take my money. So I'm so excited for this game. It's called Valley of the Gods, and you can go to the website now and check it out and learn a little bit more about the game. It's still just, you know, mostly the teaser and new stuff, but I'm so ready.
So that trailer highly impacted us as we move into the category for Games for Impact.
I see what you did there.
So here's what we have for, and this is one of my favorite categories, because one, you clearly see a whole lot of innovative, unique aspects, or even brand new, fresh narratives, like things that people were scared, like big, big mainstream AAA titles don't like to invest a lot in because, you know, they're a little scary. And if you don't get it right, you're going to hear that you didn't get it right. So for Games for Impact this year, we had Bury Me My Love, which was the Pixel Hunt, Figs, Art, and Playdeus, I think, did that. Then you had Hellblade in there from Ninja Theory. You had Life is Strange Before the Storm from Deck Nine and Square Enix. You had Night in the Woods from Infinite Fall. Please Knock on My Door by Laval Games AB. And What Remains of Edith Finch, which was Giant Sparrow and Annapurna Interactive, which I thought Annapurna also did movies. Okay, so I was like, wait, they moved into the game scene?
I guess so. They have for a while, but yeah, they do both. They are a complete entertainment, just like Sony. Sony does movies, Sony does games.
So as of the games that are here, because I think last year, the Dragon Cancer won that Games for Impact.
Yeah.
So, like, in my mind, as they were going through all of these, I'm like, there's really only three games in here, to me, that strongly deserve to be, or maybe even four, that really kind of strongly should have gotten the nom for this. So, Bury Me My Love, absolutely. Hellblade, abso-fucking-lutely. Like, that should have been the first one to be like, yeah, that's in the list. Please Knock on My Door and What Remains of Edith Finch. Because while I like Life is Strange Before the Storm, I dug it. Mm-hmm. Like, and I played it. But compared to everything else that it's being compared to, it's a lot lower on the impact.
Yeah, I was surprised that it was in here because, you know, most of the other categories only had five nominees, and this is one of the few categories that had more than five. And yeah. Out of all of them, you know, Life is Strange is the one that really felt off to me. Like, it, one of these things is not like the other.
Like the other. First thought. Absolutely. So of these, like I said, I have played some of them, and actually the one I'm sad I didn't play, What Remains of Edith Finch, like, I literally just bought, like, 8 hours ago.
Yep.
So I was like, I'm playing this.
Yeah.
So as soon as I saw it there, I'm like, aw, I'm in for some good story. But anyway, of the six nominees, the two that I really thought were going to kind of take this were going to be Bury Me My Love, which, if you haven't played that, get your pillow, get comfortable, get your tissues, because, like, oh my God, does this game, like, want to tear out your heart? And, like, make you feel for everything in the universe. And then Hellblade, which, you know, speaks on so many different platforms. And it resonates. And it really slams the idea of, you know, living with mental illness. And, you know, having that manifest in your world. And you having to combat that on top of just existing. And having this other very equally pressing goal or journey or like end game situation and have to combat your demons while getting to this destination or to achieve this goal. I thought it's just beautiful. So of all those nominees, like a lot of them I felt completely deserved to be in there, but Hellblade clearly needed to win and I'm so glad that it did.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. Next category was Best Narrative. For the Best Narrative category, you had nominees of Hellblade again.
Clearly deserved to be there for its narrative and direction and impact, yes.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Same.
Nier Automata. What Remains of Edith Finch. And Wolfenstein 2. And again, in this category, I had kind of a feeling that one of these things is not like the other. And in that, it's really Wolfenstein.
Really?
And this is why. I don't have anything against Wolfenstein 2. I think it's a great game. I think it's a great game.
Okay.
The narrative, though, when you think about the franchise...
Right. It's not necessarily innovative or new.
Right. It's just...
They've recycled it in a better way, I think.
More of the same, right? In the last Wolfenstein, in the New Order, okay, you wake up, and hey, Nazis! and they won. And you don't like that, and you won't fix it. And they got some tech now, and they're on the moon. And you gotta get some codes. Hold on. You gotta get some codes from the moon base, the Nazi moon base, bring it back, fuck the Christmas. New Colossus, guess what? Hey, it's the Nazis. They won.
Right.
You gotta go to the Mars base.
Yeah.
The Nazi Mars base to get some codes. Come back.
Here,
So you see where I'm going?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So I want to step in just a little bit because, like, I kind of feel bad for Machine Games because, you know, I think for them, like, they found their niche, they knew what they were going to do, like, they had their story, and then Nazis happened in real life, and they were like, oh, shit.
Remember, but they were double down, we're riding this wave, because we stand right by our position that you should punch Nazis.
Well, yeah, absolutely, but I think initially the second game, this new, I think they wanted to go and make it a sequel to, you know, the first one, but they're like, you know what? Maybe we'll save that story for after the Nazi dust settles in reality.
I don't think that's really a concern. They went straight at the Nazis in the game. In the first game, they went straight at the Nazis in the second game. Because guess what? Wolfenstein is about punching, knocking Nazis. And killing fucking Nazis. And that's what it should be. All I'm saying is that, you know, if you're putting me in a place with something with a best narrative, then the core of its story and the core of the narrative should be different than any way that I've experienced it. If it is a franchise before...
I agree. So of all the things that are on this list, like, my husband just bought New Colossus, so we have not sat through and played it.
Yeah.
We do have Nier Automata, which I was actually kind of surprised to see Nier Automata in this category.
Uh-huh.
Because, as I have said several times in on these shows, when my husband starts playing it, like, it puts me to sleep. And I think it's the audio design, in all honesty. It's too relaxing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like... things are as eminent because, like, the backdrop and the music is just too serene for me, so it pulls me out of, like, oh crap, like, humans have been pushed to the moon because these machines are kicking these androids' butts. Oh wait, now there are these machines that look like androids and they're really mad.
Right, and but they're the whole fucking of everything Nier Automata's narrative changes every time you play the game through your replay.
So there's some innovation
in
their narrative.
Why Nier Automata make the narrative list more so than Wolfenstein 2. But throughout all of that, and you know, Hellblade and Horizon are two very unique, very new stories, so completely makes sense to me why they were nominated in this category. And the winner was What Remains of Edith Finch, which I think, hands down, you know, comparative to the rest of the entries in the group, absolutely should take it. So I just bought it eight minutes ago.
Like, I bought it 8 hours ago, and I totally plan to play it after we're done recording today, and I'll probably end up talking about it, particularly on the next episode that we have. But moving right along, so really quickly, From Software, you know, the makers of great games like Demon's Souls, or Dark Souls, or Bloodborne,
Take Your Souls.
We break your souls and take your money.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
We take your money to break your spirit. That's what we do. We're masochists here at From Software. And they literally released, like, a 3-second trailer. Not even, like, it's more or less a teaser. And literally all it was a weapon that looked very similar to a weapon that we had in Bloodborne. And you hear it, like, snap, twist into place, and then it cuts out. So, probably getting a Bloodborne 2. Probably. It'd be nice. Because I think that narrative has
something.
It'd
be nice for you.
I'm happy for a Bloodborne 2. I'm ready for a Bloodborne 2. So, yay! Moving right along. Most anticipated game. We all have been sitting here anticipating games since the end of time. So, nominees for this category were God of War, because, you know, now we got Kratos as a dad, teaching his son how to be a God
Can
of
I call
War,
him
but
Dados
not a God
now?
Of War. Dados, yeah. There's a lot, right now, the scape is full of, like, scruffy dads, you know. Like, someone made a comment during the whole thing about how, like, now the game is not about, like, buff guys saving the princess. Now it's, like, the woman fantasy of a man taking responsibility for his kid.
Yep.
And I was like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. You want to know why? Because the majority of the community of gamers, guess
have
what?
Vaginas.
Yes.
And have kids. Anyway.
They have boobs.
They have boobs, they had kids, and they have husbands who
and
hopefully
really
rise up and raise their kids.
Men.
Responsible role models that their husbands can aspire to.
Okay? Like, we both love the last Uncharted game with Nathan Drake, right? What did Nathan do? Nathan got married, he had some issues with his wife, and we both love
he
the
sorted his issues
because
he grew up. Yep. Men growing up. By the way, I mean, Last of Us,
yeah.
Like, hey, here's this dad, lost his daughter, because of shit, finds, like, a daughter surrogate that he grows to love, and then, and like, fucks all of humanity.
To have another daughter, okay?
Yeah.
Like, fuck yeah, Joel. Love you, Joel.
It's like, go find some more giraffes. Anyway.
I don't care about all the people that are gonna die.
Let like, they ain't my problem.
I don't give a shit. You and Ellie.
They ain't my problem. Anyway, so we had God of War in this category. We had Marvel Spider-Man. We had Monster Hunter World from Capcom. We had Red Dead Redemption 2. And we had Last of Us Part 2. So, of these games...
You heard what I just said,
right? Okay. Yeah, anyway. Of the games that are in this category, there's only three on this list that I know I was anticipating. And of the three of them, there's really only two. And I mean, while I love me some Dados...
I love like, me some Dados too.
I need to know what's happening in part two of Last of Us. Like, I am more like, yes, I need to know what's going on. What's going on there? Look, Ellie, you've grown up now.
Let's be clear, okay? On paper, Last of Us 1 is not a game that I would typically play or complete, right?
Right.
There are jump scares in it.
But it's really so yummy.
It's really on the line of the survival horror side for me because you have limited resources. You don't have, you know, just a plethora.
Item management!
You know, there is that management. There are the insta-death kill, you know, if you're detected things. So it really, for me, is on the line of that. So it's not a game that, like, typically I would play nor compete. I played through that game 3 times. All the way. 3 times.
It was beautiful.
I loved the narrative. I loved the story, the characters, the way that it is delivered. It is absolutely fucking phenomenal. So, as much as I love God of War, which if I, you know, am honest, it is like my franchise for the PlayStation.
Yep. It has been for a long time, sis.
Long, long time. And they will always get my money. But as far as, like, most anticipated, if you're asking me, like, which one am I looking forward to more, the God of War game or Last of Us 2, hands down, I don't even have to think. It probably will bite my tongue trying to say it fast enough. But I'm saying Last of Us 2. When that trailer dropped, okay, I went to my room that night and downloaded off of the web The Last of Us 2 trailer, the one with Ellie playing guitar, and it took us a little bit to realize that it was Ellie playing the guitar, and Joel comes walking through the house and is like, hey, what's up, kiddo? And there's just all these dead dudes around her while she's playing guitar.
Hey! And the moment, had to take out some people, because they were trying to steal my shit.
The moment that he said, hey, what's up, kiddo? I was like, take my money, Naughty Dog, for I shall collector's edition you. Because that's how much I feel about it. So... Without a doubt, like, I don't even have a second to spare for Red Dead Redemption 2, which I have been waiting for, like everybody else on the planet, for, like, a millennia, but I am absolutely looking forward to most anticipated Last of Us 2. Jesus Christ, that game can't come fast enough.
All right, so, Game of the Year! Game of the
Daddy.
Year! Game of the Year! Anyway, nominees were Horizon Zero Dawn. Clearly deserved. I don't think Persona 5 should have been there, but it's in there, so whatever. PlayerUnknown's Battleground, PUBG, whatever, what up. Super Mario Odyssey, and Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So Nintendo had, like, 2 bouts in here. So it was really kind of a battle for me of Nintendo.
Yeah, Nintendo had this a point. high probability of winning this category.
Of winning this category with either of its two nominees for it. Granted, in these... In my mind, it was really between Horizon Zero Dawn and Legend of Zelda.
I agree.
I think of everything that's here, they were the two most innovative.
But Odyssey is a fresh game, but I wouldn't have put Odyssey up for Gotti.
No. I mean, they needed to bring something unique to their franchises, if they have franchises, had to be strongly unique as IPs, and had to have the numbers. And Legend of Zelda and Horizon Zero Dawn did.
Yeah. And PUBG has numbers. I have a difficulty giving Game of the Year to a game that is still in early access release, though, and it hasn't even
won. Like, it gets my m'lady, and it gets my I'm watching you, mm-hmm. But, like, Game of the Year, not yet.
But 20 million people playing it in early access, you can't really...
Like, hey, you can't knock that. Like, you gotta give it its claps. Yeah. Gotta give it its golf claps, because it's doing something that's getting attention. But of those two, Horizon Zero Dawn or Legend of Zelda, for me... Because I played the fuck out of it.
Yep. I still haven't done all my Divine Beasts yet. I got sidetracked with Assassin's Creed.
But Legend of Zelda took the win, and I feel like it was completely justified.
Agreed. I think that, you know, as soon as I got into the game, I was like, okay, I get it. And yeah, like, of all the things that I've played this year, I would absolutely say that my game of the year would be the Legend of Zelda game, just because I played the original Zelda way, way, way back on the NES. And, you know, to see Zelda go from that through, you know, Majora's Mask and Twilight Princess and come out the other end with this thing, which was a complete new beast that was just fantastically enjoyable to try and tame, like, hands down out of that list. And honestly, for me, it is Legend of Zelda, because I didn't play Horizon. I haven't played Horizon. I've watched some people play Horizon, and it is a gorgeous game, but to me, it just looks like a shit ton of work, and I'm not into it. So, quickly, there are two other things that we got to talk about here before we wrap up. I'm actually going to do them slightly out of order, just because I want to give one more time than the other. Bandai Namco! What the fuck? They just come out of no place. And just like, hey, we want to talk a little bit. We learned some stuff on Tekken. And so we think we could do this right now. Hey, guess what?
We got a question for you. Does your heart still burn?
Well, no. Does your soul still burn? And as soon as I said that, I was like, oh, fuck me. Yes. I need a Soul Calibur game because...
Oh, my. As soon as that came out, I was like, husband, when I talk on this show, I'm sure the first thing my sister's going to want to talk about is fucking Soul Calibur 6.
So I tried to be really good and not make it the first thing.
Because I was like, oh no, here we go.
Y'all know I love me the fighter games, okay? And I'm sorry, initially, the Street Fighter game was hot trash. It's hot trash. Whole system fucked up. They fixed it now. It's much better. But you only get one time to impress me, so it's hot trash, so I haven't touched it. Injustice 2, good looking out. Solid. It actually won for its fighting game category this
That's because it doesn't have to compete against Soul Calibur 6.
Right. Because, oh my god, as soon as I saw Mitsurugi, I was like, okay, I don't care if I have to donate plasma. I don't, like, if I need to...
But what about the character that they kind of showed, like, the side profile with no head, who seems to have, like, the weapon that looks like it could both be Soul Edge and Soul Calibur?
Yes. Oh, god. I can't.
Because I was like, oh, shit.
You know how you dissected the Death Stranding trailer? That's how I dissected the Soul Calibur trailer. So I could spend a whole show just talking about that trailer. But what I'm mostly happy to see is that in the world where MMOs have really been dominating the gaming sphere for a while, you know, Bethesda even doing the Linda Carter PSA about, you know, creating the campaign to save player one and putting focus and emphasis on single player games, because in the MMO world, the single player is alone.
Is the loneliest number.
It's true. I am that person because, you know, with the exception of, really, Overwatch and Destiny, I don't really MMO anymore because I can't do anything in Call of Duty because it's just so toxic. And so I play single player there and then I'm done and then that's my experience. I had similar experience playing Siege 6, so I had to stop, which really sucked because it's such a good game. But fighters, you don't have to talk to play online players.
You put your skills out there.
Skills out there. And
that's it.
And I cut my teeth on fighting games on consoles. Forever I will be a fan of fighters and brawlers. And so it really has, I've felt the lack of good fighters for a while. And so as soon as I heard the Does Your Soul Still Burn, I was like, fuck yeah, it feels good to be a gamer. So I'm really excited for that to be coming. It is Soul Calibur 6 is slated to be released in 2018. I don't care if it's holiday 2018. Bandai Namco, you get my money. Thank you. Just thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Okay. So the very last thing that we need to talk about was the Icon Award this year.
Yep.
Which I love how they like to find people who have done their dues, are innovators who have paved the way for the gaming industry that we know right now. And with as toxic as this world has been fairly recently, with a lot of people not feeling like they are heard or represented or seen, that this year they decided to give the Icon Award to Carol Shaw, who was part of the original Atari team, who brought games like River Raid
to
the Atari.
I can't tell you how excited I was, because, you know, so many award shows, their Legends Awards are, ooh, we think this person's about to die, so we should probably honor them before, like, they go away. At least that's the feel that I get about them. Or they're just we haven't really given you the accolades that we should have throughout your career, so we'll give you this acknowledgement of your full career, and that will kind of make up for us not giving you...
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio finally getting your Oscar.
Okay. So I have a very personal story, because Carol Shaw means a lot to me as a person. So when I was growing up, it was not cool for girls to be into video games. Like, that was a thing that little boys like to do, not a thing that little girls like to do. And so it took me forever to convince my parents to even let me play video games. And I'm saying my parents let me, because at this time you weren't even in existence.
I didn't say nothing.
I know, but I could feel you thinking it through the internet. So I just wanted to preface it with that.
They weren't my parents yet.
They weren't your parents yet. They were just mine. They were all mine. But when I finally did, the first system that I had was an Intellivision system, and, you know, most of the games that were on there were available were all, you know, sports games. So I played baseball, I played, golf, I played tennis, which I absolutely hated, but hey, it was a game that I had. And I played Burger Time, and Burger Time was, like, the first game that I had that wasn't, like, a sports-related game. And so that's why I tell people all the time that it's the game that made me a gamer, because I fell in love with that platformer and the puzzle solver, and... You know, it wasn't just, play sports, all that kind of stuff. But the next game that I played after that was on a friend of mine who had an Atari 2600, was River Raid. And it was the coolest fucking thing I'd ever, like, seen in someone's home in my house, because it was just so simple but yet complex to pick up and do. And I loved playing it, and it was challenging. It was truly challenging. And so when I got a little older, I started doing some research, because I was really interested in the people who created the games that really shaped, you know, my childhood. And so I wanted to know more about Atari. So I learned about Nolan Bushnell, and that's when I learned that Steve Jobs, who I admired at Apple, had worked at Atari, and, like, his story and things like that. And then I accidentally stumbled onto Carol Shaw. And Carol's story is so unique, because there weren't a lot of women working at Atari Activision, let alone working in video games as engineers, as creators at the time. And I loved her story, and I just thought it was so cool that she worked on so many games, because, and she even mentioned this during the video tribute that they did leading into her getting picking up her award, was at that time at Atari, when you got assigned a game, you created the whole game. So it was one person that created all of the character design and the level design. It was one person.
And the UI and the mechanics.
And the code. Okay? So it wasn't like you handed off, like, this whole package of ideas and then it was coded by somebody else. You wrote the code as well. So this one woman created River Raid. And she's like, and I wasn't really a designer, but, you know, we only had a certain amount of pixel space to work in, so it kind of made it easier to do. So she talked about making the polo game and then, you know, River Raid. And I was so floored, because I had not really known that about Carol Shaw or any of the people that worked at Atari in the early days. You know, I always think of, and have always thought of, game development as being this big team effort, right? You have designers, you have programmers, you have QA testers. You guys all work together and collaborate on bringing this holistic vision together. You do your pieces, parts, they all get assembled, and then you marvel at this thing that you created. But I can't imagine being told, hey, you're going to create a game, go do it.
There you go.
And have to do the whole thing all by yourself. And so then its success or failure is all on you. There's no, you know, if we had spent more time on the character design. No, if you had spent more time on the character design. And so it made me admire her even more. And, you know, when you think of previous Icons Awards being given to the team that started Sierra Games, I like you, Panda, I really appreciate Jeff Keighley and team going, you know, icons are to be recognized as those that came before us and made the careers of everybody in this room, the passions of everybody in this room possible. If there was no Nolan Bushnell, there would be no David Jaffe. There would be no Ed Boon. There would be...
That's right.
You know, and so if there were no Carol Shaws, there would be no Jade Raymonds. There would, you know, like, it would not be possible. And so it was really heartwarming to me for the icon not only to be a woman, but specifically for it to be Carol Shaw because of what she means to me personally. So, like, not gonna lie, I teared up at that moment. And, like, she was just so sweet and so cute and so little, like, California grandma. She was so
the Betty White of video games. She really like, was. Everyone in that room was like, I love and appreciate you.
It just...
And
it was so
and great. And your journey.
It was so great. And I gotta
say... Can we talk about how sweet it was that she pulled out paper with her notes where everyone else was, like reading their thank yous from their phone?
Like that. I just...
So analog. I was like, oh my god, you are so cute.
I love her. And I love her story, and I love, really overall, as we wrap up here, that this year's award show... Really, in all honesty, I had the least amount of negative reaction to. I thought that the show really went well. I think they can cut down on the pre-show time.
Like, yeah, I agree.
I don't need that much. Like, do...
Like, 10 minutes before, boom. None of this 30-minute bullshit.
Do it. Like, do pre-show. And I know why you do it, because it's like the Oscars. But really, like, we ain't got time for that. You're keeping us from actually gaming and, like, downloading the DLC that you keep saying is, like, available now. Take your pre-show and actually run it online as pre-show the day before. You tape the interviews. They're done. It's not like you did them live that day. Run them the day before to get us all hyped up and psyched and get this shit to 2.5 hours, okay? But, like, overall, of all the categories and nominees and awards, like, there weren't anyone where I was just like, oh, that's totally just a, you know, pity play or what... you wash my back, I wash yours kind of situation. I really felt like every category had, you know, was filled with nominees that really deserved to be there. I really didn't have, like, anyone that won a category where I was like, no, fucking no, that's not right. Like, I didn't have that. And this is the first time in the history of video game award shows that I've watched that I felt that way.
I think it's finally hit its stride.
It really has.
Now it can fine-tune and cut its time down and be absolutely scrumptious.
So big up to Team Keighley for really getting it right and putting in the effort and creating something that our community can be proud of. You know, it's like that guy Haze Light, who was very, 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 very jet-lagged and also very, 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 very drunk.
And very, very, very passionate.
Very, very, very passionate. He's very, very...
Wait, no, wasn't he the... Not Firewatch, he was the
Haze Light. Haze Light's the name of the company that makes the game.
It was like the get... Not the get the fuck out game, but the way out.
Yeah,
a way out.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck Oscars, man!
Yeah, and I agree with him, because it... When you think of, like, a lot of the other award shows for industries, where the industry is basically rewarding itself... Mm-hmm. Everything does kind of feel like, with the exception of the surprise wins here and there, usually in the documentary or, like, you know, kind of obscure categories where you have the surprising wins, it does feel very much trite. You know, like, we're going through the motions.
Oh, you mean about how La La Land got Oscars because it was musical about Hollywood?
Keep it moving. Okay, yes. But okay. When I look at and I think of, like, the Grammys, and I think of, like, the Oscars, and I think about the SAG Awards, and, you know, all those things, I am very proud to now put up against all of those as being the recognition for the industry award show that should be, you know, revered and understood and have its place in prime time and be deserving of the audience and of the industry, I can now proudly say that the Game Awards belong there. And I wouldn't have said that about the Game Awards when they were on Spike and what Spike was doing with that thing. Okay, this feels like a good award show. The only thing that I would really add, in all honesty, I know I'm going to get pushback for it, is that I do feel like any industry show should have an in memoriam. And I don't know if they did one that just was off camera, but I do feel like you do need to, as much as you do the Icon Award and you do the tribute to Andy House, who's, leaving PlayStation, you also need to, recognize, people that you lose in your industry as well. So I'm proud of the Game Awards show. This is the first year that I'm really proud of it. And I would, for anybody who was like, oh, it's not a real award show, it's just for video games, I'd be like, no, fuck you. It's just on the same level as far as I'm concerned with the Grammys. So take your shit and move on.
Touché. Well said, sis.
All right, so we got to wrap it up here. We hope that you enjoy it. Quick update for you guys. There will be no new episode of our podcast next week. So there's not going to be an episode out on December 18th? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But we will have a clip show for Christmas. Basically, we're taking our little holiday break here. But we will have a clip show for you with some very interesting, unfortunately for us, fortunately for you, things in it for you Christmas week. And we will be back in the new year, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and oh man, ready to put some money down on some games and have some really good fun. So if you enjoyed our show, please make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. You can get us in iTunes. You can find us in Stitcher Radio. Whether you use iTunes on the desktop or on the podcast application on your iOS device, you can just search for the Eshcast and subscribe. We're also in Google Play. We're also in VogNetwork.com's lineup of great content that you should be checking out. You can even listen to our podcast directly on our website, electricsisters.com. There's so many ways for you to listen to our show. We're working on bringing it to Spotify. So please, please, please stick with us. Share us with your friends. Help us not be the best-kept secret on the internet any longer. We'd appreciate that. We'd also appreciate you checking out some of the other great sites that are part of our network, as well as the shows that they put together across, the web and audio and video. It's just so much fun to be part of this nerdy little family. So we'll kick it off with KBD and Camp over at b3crew.com with the No Borders, No Race podcast every other week. Coming back to weekly soon, but for now, sticking with the end of the week, introducing you to some great music from across the globe that you probably haven't heard, but really should check out, as well as some coverage of some great indie games, anime, manga, video games, and so much more. Make sure that you check out and bookmark b3crew.com and check out the No Borders, No Race podcast. On Wednesday night, our homie Hamsterman 2049 streams live on Twitch, 9 Eastern, playing old games and new. So make sure that you hit up our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, to get the link. Every Wednesday night, live, he plays old and new games. I really enjoyed attempting to watch him play Outlast and then squealing and turning it off. But I know other brave souls stayed, so definitely make sure that you check out his live stream and his website, smashedrook.com. My favorite recap and review artist online today, and not just because I know him personally, but because his show is just fucking fun, Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube. Make sure you check out his recaps. His archive is awesome. You can call, be part of chat live. It is absolutely fantastic. I cannot recommend it more, so check out issuesprogram.com as well as hitting up his YouTube page to search for Phil's Recap and Review and subscribe. It's real importante. And then last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave. Everything from anime, manga, comic books, games, and more. If it's nerdy, the nerds over at NerdCrave are talking about it. So with that, we'd love to hear from you guys what you think about the award show. You know, if you agree with you know, our thoughts on the winners and the non-winners, or there's ones that you want to share with us, then please make sure that you hit us up on our social. You can get us on Instagram at ESH News. We're putting out a bunch of stuff, so please make sure that you like and share that stuff, if you like and share. And if you don't, then comment on it and be like, ugh, we don't like this stuff. Do something different. But please be polite about telling us to do something different. Don't just tell us to go fuck ourselves. We really don't like that. But you can hit us up on Instagram at ESH News, and you can hit us up on Twitter at ESH News. See what we did there. And like I said, we are on Facebook, so just search for Electric Sisterhood on, actually, the Land of Ash on Facebook, and you'll find us because the whole team works on that page, and we share all of our content there. But it's time for us to get going. So until next time, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we're out.
Titties.